Brenna Bell, welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Thank you.
Brenna's an activist in the woods fighting destructive logging on the ground, preserving Oregon's forests and waters. She's also the policy director and attorney for the organization BARC that has been in the leadership in preserving old-growth forests and fighting destructive forest and water practices in Oregon, especially in Mount Hood, for 20 years. Over those years, the need for forest protection became ever more insistent, as we have learned that modern logging and forest practices still in use around the world produce considerable greenhouse gas emissions. And today it's widely appreciated that reforestation and improved forestry practices are crucial to stop global heating and its threat to human existence. Before we get to what has to be done, give us a rundown on the considerable impact of logging and forest practices on climate change.
Sure, Bill. This is something that I'm really excited about talking about right now, because I think it's been just missing from both conversations around climate change and around forest management, and that is the amazing role that forests play in the carbon cycle. And as most people know, in Oregon, you know, most of our state is heavily forested on the west side and some on the east side. And our state has an amazing capacity to sequester carbon in its forests. Just amazing. We're some of the top forests in the nation, this ecosystem for carbon sequestration. And unfortunately, as you all know, Oregon's history around logging has been to take out almost all of our old-growth trees. So our forests are in this huge, huge deficit for the amount of carbon they could be sequestering. So we have a situation where we have this amazing asset, which is our forests, which can sequester carbon. And instead, they're being logged, and that's releasing the carbon to such an extent that recent studies have shown that logging emissions in Oregon are the number one source of carbon in the state, bigger than the transportation sector, bigger than the energy sector. Is logging, and they're not accounted for in the state's carbon accounting. And so we have this huge source of emissions where we could have an amazing ally in carbon sequestration. So looking at forests and their role in carbon is becoming ever more important. I mean, the good folks at 350 are focused on having 350 parts per million, but we're already over that, right? We're about 404 parts per million. And so we need to start thinking about what can pull carbon out of the atmosphere also, and that's where forests come in.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the ways in which logging and all forest practices, like the road building, the destruction of soils, all of it. Tell us about those specific things. We can't go into much detail on this show, but there's a lot of information on the BARC website and many mm-hmm. others. But tell us about the specific ways that carbon emissions are so increased by deforestation.
Sure. I mean, I think that the first main thing to know is that trees are humongous sticks of carbon. Every part of them is made of carbon. So you have the trunk, which is where most of it is, but a lot of it's also in the root system, which people don't think about, and the branches and the leaves. And so when a tree is cut, a lot of that carbon is lost way more speedily than would be in a natural decomposition process. And oftentimes you hear now people talk about wood as this green building material that stores carbon. And that's true, but it stores about 15% of the carbon that a live tree stores. About 15%, because the rest of it is lost in rapid decomposition.
And then sometimes it gets burned. This furniture or houses are wrecked and they mm-hmm. wind up in landfills, and then they're...
Right. And most wood products, most trees don't become houses or furniture. They don't become things that have long lives. They become newspapers and magazines and toilet paper
right.
and wood chips and pallets, things that are one use and then go to the landfill. And so all of that carbon is going to decompose much, much more rapidly than it would if it was left in the forest. You know, forest activists have been thinking a lot about the slogan, keep it in the ground, that a lot of fossil fuel activists have been talking about for different fossil fuels, and Senator Merkley is really behind. We like to say, keep it in the forest. The best place that we could store our carbon is in the live trees.
And in the soils.
And in the soils, absolutely.
The soils get disturbed, and when they get disturbed, they lose it gets oxidized, the carbon in there, and it becomes carbon dioxide.
Yeah, and all the root systems and all the fungal and all the mycelium, all the systems underneath the soil, all break down.
They all break down.
There's so much going on in forests, and, you know, modern management thinks that we know the best thing to do, and now a lot of logging is positioned as forest health logging. They say the forests are sick and they're overstocked, and so we have to log. That's just exactly going the wrong way.
Yeah, there's also, well, the ruination of waters and the change in the microclimates when the trees are cut down, which then reduces the growth of trees in adjacent areas and changes the microclimate so much that it stresses the trees. But I don't think we can get into that because, Brenna, this is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Bill Resnick talking to Brenna Bell, who is the policy director, attorney, and activist. She's in the forest with all of the troops. What happens when you're arrested? Can you represent yourself?
I don't do criminal defense, Bill. Then I go to the lawyers who know that.
You know what they say about a good lawyer? They are bad lawyers for themselves, whatever that line is. Anyway, we've discussed forest practices that are so, make such a huge contribution is the wrong word. They release massive amounts of greenhouse gas emissions, but they don't have to.
They don't have to.
As Brenna Bell has pointed out, they could, in fact, technical word is sequester, but they could gather
up
and in fact create natural environments for all sorts of reasons, including cleaning water.
Yeah.
And cooling water. Yes, they're crucial parts of a natural environment that provides the basis of human life. Tell us what has to be done. There can be some forestry and some wood products.
Yes, absolutely. But
tell us what has to be done.
There was a recent study that made coming out of Oregon State University that made several recommendations of how we can transform forests from major carbon emitters to carbon sequesterers. And two of their main recommendations was immediately stop logging mature and old growth forests. Just stop. Keep those massive stores of carbon in the ground. And the second was to increase the cutting rotation on those forests that we have deemed to be crops or plantations, double it from 40 years to 80 years.
That is not increase the speed. They don't want to speed it up.
No.
Slow it down.
Exactly. Increase the length of time between which you log. And one of the ones that we're really focused on in BARC is the first, is stopping old growth logging on national forests. And a lot of people listening might think, wait, I thought you did that. And you know what? We thought we did that too, because Mount Hood National Forest has not proposed to log mature and old growth forests for the last decade. But now they are, again. And they're going exactly the wrong way. And again, they're positioning it as forest health. One of the timber sales that we're back in court for the first time in many years fighting is called the Crystal Clear Restoration Project.
Restoration.
Yeah, it's all restoration, Bill.
Yeah.
And so they're restoring these old growth forests. Forests up to 300 years old, they're restoring them by taking half of the trees out, because if they don't log the trees, then they might burn. Of course, if they do log the trees, they also might burn. Forests burn. It's what they do, and it's what they're supposed to do, and logging it usually makes fire patterns worse.
But natural forests, when they burn, preserves most of the carbon in the old wood.
Exactly.
Which falls to the ground finally and becomes part of the earth. Yeah, the burning is a very small amount, actually.
About 95% of the carbon stays in a forest after a fire. Only about 5% of the biomass of a forest actually burns. It's way smaller than people thought. There's a study came out 2 weeks ago from the University of Idaho that was looking exactly at that issue, because the researchers thought that there were people that were grossly overstating the amount of carbon released in forest fires. And so they decided to really look at that question, and they found that their assumption was correct. People are grossly overstating the amount of carbon that's released in forest fires. Almost all of it stays in the forest, and that which gets released gets sucked back in by all the new growth, because fires are a huge cleaner out of the forest, and they just bring burgeoning new growth in that then starts the carbon cycle all over again.
Look, let's emphasize, we only have a couple minutes. let's emphasize the need for changing forest practices whole lot, and that it can be done, and then talk about what BARC is doing and what various other, there's all sorts of affiliated organizations all over the world, particularly now that the indigenous are protecting are protecting their lands and talking about climate change.
What can be done? Okay.
What can be done?
So much can be done.
Yeah.
One of the first things we're really calling for is an end to volume-driven management on public lands. Right now, the Forest Service is told by people in Congress and Washington, D.C., you must log this amount of timber off of your forest. And that makes everything else suspect. That means restoration projects have to produce timber volume. That means any kind of approach to restorative forestry has to produce a high amount of timber volume, which is not at all correlated to what the market could bear or what the local economy needs. And it certainly does not focus on keeping the biggest and best trees in the forest, because obviously those are the ones that have the most volume. And so we would love to see a shift where our national forests are valued for their carbon sequestration, for their water protection, for the climate refugia that we're going to need to have in a changing climate, for so many things besides producing commercial timber, and refocus to getting the wood that we do need. We need some, but we could sure use a lot less if we conserved more from places that are already managed as tree plantations.
Now, you are in court now and then, and on Crystal Creek, you're spending more time in court rather than various other
Have them playing in the forest.
Do you have all the outfits that are proper for court? I was once an attorney, and I was ruled out because I didn't have a tie. And the probation officer there, one of the staff, said, "Hi, Bill, here's one."
Yeah. So, I dress appropriately for all my different hats.
But anyway, let's talk about the role of law and court stuff and movements. You pointed out that you win in court when you have big public movements, and if you don't have the movements, you have a real problem.
You have a big problem. You might win on the law even, but you won't affect change. You know, when we're in court, we're trying to implement, you know, federal laws, federal policy on federal land. And those laws and policies were not made to protect the public interest. And insofar as they were, they are the result of public movements. Like the National Environmental Policy Act, which is one of the main laws that we litigate under, came because of the environmental movement of the 70s. And it has been steadily eroded since then. And tools keep getting taken out of that toolbox to the point where now there's a rule that's just been proposed by the federal government to exempt timber sales up to 7,000 acres from public review and review under NEPA, which means litigation tools might just kind of be thrown out the door. And if we don't have a movement, a people's movement, to step in and say, we need a voice in the forest, these are public lands, and their management affects our public health. It affects the climate, our future livability of this area. That's where movements come back in, which I love the work that BARC does of using all the tools in the federal policy and law toolbook. But there's also been a gap in Portland around more direct action forest activism, which is where I got my start during the salvage rider era, which is when we had no laws to enforce because they'd been tossed out the door by Congress. So there's now a new group that I'm just going to plug that's called the Climate Forest Alliance, that is focused on getting grassroots organizing and more action-oriented folk back into the forest, because sometimes you need to actually block the roads. It's not what BARC does. It's not even what I do anymore, but I'm sure glad that there's a group like the Climate Forest Alliance there. And if people are interested in it, their email is crystalclearlywrong@riseup.net, and they're focused on that crystal clear timber sale that I mentioned that would log 3,000 acres of old growth as a forest restoration and fuels reduction project.
Renna Bell, really good talking to you.
Thanks, Bill.
Your enthusiasm, I hope, is extremely infectious. And, you know, get out in the forest and breathe some good air.
Thank you. I will. And at BARC, one of the things we do is really encourage people to come to the forest with us And we do a public hike every month on the second Saturday. And we do a public camp out at the end of August. And this year we're celebrating our 20th anniversary in the forest at our base camp. And we're really excited to get people out to the forest and find out what they love and learn, get tools to protect it as best we can.
Thanks a lot again.
Thanks.
See you in the forest.
Yeah.
Rainforest, mist and mystery, teeming green, green brain facing the bottom, climate control center for the world, ancient cord coexistence hacked by parasitic greedhead scam, from Sarawak to Amazonas, Costa Rica to mangy BC hills, cortege rhythm of falling timber. What kind of currency grows in these new deserts, these brand new floodplains?